I wanted to ask you about the offshore aquaculture legislation in Washington. It seems to have a lot more momentum this time through. I think I've spoken to you before, maybe in teleconference, about the balancing act in Washington over offshore aquaculture. In Alaska, we're clearly opposed to it, but you have colleagues in the Senate who need this for their state.
Well, very clearly, there is a momentum behind it. There's so much offshore aquaculture commencing around the world. I think many people feel we'll be left behind if and be dependent upon imports for our fish resources if we don't get involved. The aquaculture bill that was presented to us by the administration did cover Alaska, both finfish and shellfish aquaculture. When I introduced that bill for the administration, I said I would offer an amendment to exempt Alaska from it, at least as far as finfish aquaculture is concerned. And I think, it, as a matter of fact, since we're talking about the area beyond the 3-mile limit out to 200-mile limit in that bill, we're trying to opt us out entirely. We have half the coastline of the United States, and we have the greatest supply of finfish and shellfish in the country. So until it's been really proven that they can operate without damage to the natural fishery resources, including shellfish, I think we should hold off. I have every indication that the people agree with us in terms of just exempting, keeping Alaska out, for the reason that we have such a large area, half the coastline, and the demands for that program would be so great in Alaska, they feel they won't get the money for theirs. So I think we're going to succeed in exempting Alaska from that.
If you could look in a crystal ball far into the future, could you safely say that we won't have offshore aquaculture?
We already have a state law that permits shellfish aquaculture. I think we will be, because of this vast number of lands along our shoreline that are withdrawn, where there's absolutely no pollution right now, we will be the target eventually for offshore shellfish aquaculture. Well, I don't see any reason with the natural capability we have to ever get into finfish aquaculture off Alaska.
Shifting gears from the ocean to the land, there were public hearings this spring in Sitka throughout southeast Alaska on the Tongass Land Management Plan adjustment, 7 alternatives for proposed levels of harvest. And in Sitka, not much of a surprise, we heard probably 80 people come forward and say that they felt that the current level of harvest that's going on in the Tongass and the proposed level of harvest that was going on in the Tongass was out of step with reality. They wanted to look at the economic value of the intact forest versus the working forest of, you know, the past 30, 40, 50 years. Then 2 weeks later, there was a hearing in Ketchikan, and it went the same.
About the same people, probably, traveling around testifying to hearings. I don't know. I don't think that reflects the real attitude of Alaskans. We entered into an agreement with the federal government under the Tongass Timber Reform Act. That withdrew 83% of the timber of the Tongass from harvest. Only 17% of the Tongass can be harvested under that act. Now for people to come in and say, as to the 17%, that it would be uneconomic to harvest, I don't buy that. Of course, everyone's entitled to their own opinion. But once you enter into an agreement that took 7 years to reach, and we went from 450 million board feet a year down to 240 billion board feet a year. As a matter of fact, the first year I was in the Senate, we harvested 1.5 billion board feet of timber. And even at that rate, it would have taken 101 years to harvest all of the timber in the Tongass for the first time. We made, I think, substantial concessions to these people who don't want any timber cutting at all. And I think it's bad faith to come in after negotiating an agreement like that and say, no, we don't want to hit, because an economic value from the timber for tourism? Tourism is a 3-4 month a year proposition. The area won't sustain itself on 4 months a year income. And you'll find the people even involved in the fishery business now, in the processing of a fish. These people are here for about 2 months a year. Sitka can't sustain itself without some year-round income. And that proposal in the Tongass Timber Reform Act to harvest only 17% with a cutting cycle still well in excess of 50 years. I really think that we ought to be able to proceed on the agreement that was made. It was an agreement made in good faith, And the people involved in the timber industry, people who work for the timber companies, they're entitled to a lifestyle, too.
The Secure Rural Schools Act, we also call it timber receipts. Do you find it hard to make a case in Washington to extend, or on the Hill, to extend the Secure Rural Schools Act?
That's basically a law that was made for Oregon and Washington, who had the same, they've had the same problem we've had, only it's not as acute because our small towns in the timber area really existed solely off of that income in the past. Sitka was predominantly a town based upon the mill and all of the activities associated with it. I don't know how long that's going to last. You can't keep up a myth. You can't say that we're going to extend this until we start cutting again and at the same time agree with the people that shouldn't cut. That I don't think that can be relied on very well. And it was an emergency measure primarily for Oregon. It really wasn't something that we dreamed up. But our people, we benefited from it, and we still will benefit for a short time. But I think it's a very short duration. I don't think the rest of the country is going to pay us for our myth.
Okay. Last issue for me is Governor Palin came in. I think she was popular in Sitka, and suddenly the capital budget came out. Deep cuts. Sitka had, I want to say, $2.3 million in small capital projects, discretionary capital projects. Everything cut but $5,000 for Big Brothers Big Sisters program. A lot of the things that the governor was cutting, she was saying, was not the government's responsibility. Sewer improvements out Sawmill Creek Road, equipment for the Performing Arts Center. Is government changing in Alaska?
Well, we face the same attitude in Washington, you know, and it's not just an attitude in Alaska. It's an attitude nationwide that there are many things that in other areas the people of the counties or state government have seen fit to cut and to eliminate based upon the fact that in many very prosperous areas, these functions are supported by local foundations or local people have a very great wealth and get tax advantage by helping to support these functions. And we see a lot of that. We don't know the specifics of what the governor's cuts were here or elsewhere, because that's not our business. My policy not to get involved in what governors do in the state, because I don't have any function in the state. My function is represent state in Washington. But I will say this, it increases our problem in Washington if we don't see a local effort at home. Congress is more and more basing federal assistance on the extent of local effort to meet the needs of the area. In many instances, requires a matching fund, matching contribution from a state or from a local government before we put up federal money now.
The responsibility of government's the same, but the process is changing.
Well, the philosophy of government is once again saying to people, we have to be a showing of local support before you get state money or federal money to enter in to help. Then I think that's a reasonable thing. It's the Lincoln philosophy, as a matter of fact. Don't do for people but through government what they can or should do for themselves.
Senator, I know you have a schedule for
coming.
Yes,
I'm off to Petersburg now and then to Wrangell tonight, and we'll move over to Craig tomorrow and Sunday. It's nice to be down. I enjoyed being here very much. There's a lot of renewal here. As a matter of fact, I went into the plant.
Silver Bay Seafood?
Silver Bay. Those people have really designed a state-of-the-art processing facility to take that fish through it and pack it and freeze it and just in record time and under the most sanitary conditions I've seen. And I think that is real progress. And there's a different attitude than when I was here about. Well, see, I was here a little over a year ago, and a lot of people were saying, you know, what can you do to help us? Now, they're not saying this. They're saying, look what we've done for ourselves. And it's a real nice attitude I found here. That's a good example, though. That's an economy that's only going to last, 60 days a year.
Mm-hmm.
It ought to be offset by another economy that will last another part of the year. And most of the young people working there are college students from all over the West. It's not really the kind of long-term employment that's going to sustain the working people in this area. So I think we have to keep going and find other ways to use the resources of this area. I would like to see the kind of timber production here that is consistent with the agreements we reached in the Tigers Timber Reform Act and have it supplement this activity is associated with increased production and processing of fisheries. And then I think Sitka would be back where it could help itself.